world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media, who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Where I stay is getting hot now. Unemployment is high and buildings is getting chopped down. Gold teeth populating the blocks. Slim and slang day and night on the lookout for cops. Make a shot ring out like the Liberty Bell. No escape from the heat, it's getting hotter than hell. Like the ovens on broil with blood stains on the soil. Pants gone in the colors of crown royal. And little sister got a baby on hip. And her mama never home, so the cycle is sick. Young ballers on the court wanna play in the league. But got knocked in the spot for a quarter of weed. It's getting hot in here, baby, leave on your clothes. Much more to live in life than emulating them hoes. I try to speak truth in the form of my flow. But the temperature is rising, it's harder to grow.
Gotta keep my head up.
Yeah,
even though I'm fed up.
Survival every day.
It's getting hard to eat.
Right.
And all the trauma in the streets.
It's getting hot in every way.
Gotta keep my head up.
Yeah,
even though I'm fed up.
Survival every day.
It's getting hard to eat.
Right.
And all the trauma in the streets.
It's getting hot in every way.
Open, rest in peace, headquarters, tunnel vision. Most of us is rushing like a special order of stolen iron. Block is hot, get it on fire. With more narc sales than ever barks down from the shoulder wire. We keep growing like hair when you die. Black butterfly on the rose that's preparing to fly. I'll paint a picture in the color of the orchid. It's vivid. Whatever kid I'm talking, I spit it, I walk it, I live it. God bless my every step. I need to go through a reverend. Your boy Houston got an eye out just to get into heaven. We live between heaven and hell like John Constantine. Doing crimes and confessing like a teenage drama queen. We was leaning now, we're falling down like Michael Tucker. I spit it fast, I gotta get it out. They might unplug it and try to drug us. So I stay aware and watch out for the setup. Never scared to go head up. Got a plan to get my bread up, man.
Gotta keep my head up.
Yeah.
All right, we're back for another show, June 27, 2008. This is your host, So Real, and this is Truth, Love, Freedom. We're going to have another interview today with a Freemason. Should be fun. Sorry, I didn't start out with my usual intro song, whatever happened. Another subtle difficulty that I had, and selected the wrong song. No worries. Just gives us more time to talk to John Radcliffe, who's going to be our guest today. And we'll be hitting him up here real quick. So, let's see. I'm online on multiple things right now on StickCam. If you actually go to my site, truthlovefreedom.org, there is a section. If you scan down, it says I'm online, and it basically gives you every single chat client that I have. Also, like I said, I'm on StickCam. You can see StickCam from truthlovefreedom.org's front site, and there's also a chat room there for people who are watching the show to conversate. If you're listening, you can go there and talk about what you're hearing and what you think. I'll check back with it here and there. I don't pay too much attention to it. It's mostly just for people to chat with one another about what we're talking about. But I do check here and there to see if there is anything that somebody wants to share. And hopefully, you know, there will be. We're also taking calls. You can call in and talk to John Radcliffe, a Freemason. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's REVERE. Zero. Or 1-877-738-3730. I'll give that number out as we go through the show today multiple times, and I hope that you do call in and ask him questions. The reason why John has decided to come on the show was because the first interview I did with the 32nd Degree Freemason, and if you're listening now and you didn't listen to the last show, or not the last show, but the show before that, a couple weeks ago, I did an interview with the 32nd Degree of the Scottish Rite Freemason. And it was my second interview with him when I did a podcast, when the show was originally just a podcast. I was, you know, doing an interview with him, and I posted it, and I got a lot of feedback, actually. It was pretty amazing how much feedback I got. And one of the feedback, one of the things that I got back was actually a link to my site, and I can tell whenever somebody links to me, it comes up. So just... it heads up if you guys know that. I don't know. Most people already know that you can do that. But I list out every site that links to me. And I had this one link and I checked it out. I was just seeing who's linking to me. And I got a post from a guy, Esoteric Freemasons. This is the title of the blog that he posted from. Esoteric Freemasons and Conspiracy Nuts Are Driving Me to Distraction. Well, that should be pretty revealing about where he's coming from. He's definitely coming from a different place than my the interview I did with Greg Stewart, which is perfectly fine. Like I said at the beginning of the interview, that this was certainly a different situation. And, you know, a different person. And everybody in Freemasonry has their own opinions. I have my own opinion. Everybody who's listening has their own opinions. That's how opinions are. And I made it clear that he does not, his beliefs do not encapsulate Freemasonry. They are not, you know, they were just his perspectives on Freemasonry. It was very personal. So, that's what you can expect. You're not going to expect that everyone's going to have the same opinion. And this guy is definitely coming from a different aspect of Freemasonry. Not saying it's better or worse, the number is just different. And, let's see here. I'm going to try to get him on the phone in just a second, but it appears that I can't at the moment. I might have to go to another a little song or something real quick to get this up.
The name of the person was not understood.
Okay.
Press star pound. To play back, press 2-3. To re-record, press 2-3.
Okay, I have to enter an extension to get to him. We'll try that again. Hold on just a second. So anyways, he has a different perspective on Freemasonry, and his perspective is based upon a different understanding, which is that it's more of a fraternal organization than, you know, per se, a religious institution. You know, John, the Greg Stewart, the Freemason that I did an interview with, he had no problem saying to him it was religious. Some people have a pretty serious problem with that. And, you know, I'm not trying to say which one's right or wrong. And that's up for you. You know, that's up to you to decide. I mean, as we study it, we're going to get into the different topics about Freemasonry. I'm going to go through the degrees and so on. And it's going to be up to you to draw your own conclusions from the research and see what you want to believe. Many Freemasons, and I mean many, will try to dissuade you from having an opinion on it. I want to encourage you to just go ahead and have your own opinion. You know, like, that's how what it's all about. It's just their opinion. No one, there's no, you know, there's no Bible.
Hello,
for this.
Thank you for calling to Mutronics Corporation. If you know the extension of the party you're trying to reach, please enter it now, as these are the corporate offices. Customer service call.
Let's see if this works here. Get him on the line.
Your call cannot be transferred to extension 1-4. Please enter extension and pound sign, or press 0 for transfer.
Oh, it's working. My God. That's nice.
Hello?
Hello, is this John?
Yeah.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Here, I want to play a little intro song for you. I think you find amusing.
Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do.
Who needs Atlantis off the maps?
Okay, that's enough of that. I'm just harassing you a little bit. I'm sure you're familiar with that song.
I'm trying to remember. That was the Simpsons one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So how you doing today?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Great. So I was just telling everybody that the reason why you wanted to come on the show is because you were, in many ways, you were in disagreement with Greg as to some of the principles about Freemasonry, things that you believe versus what he believes. Is that pretty fair?
If I gave that impression, that was an error on my part.
Uh-huh.
because that's not really the case. What is the case is I disagree. In fact, just this week it came up again. Mm-hmm. I disagree with how he explains it.
Oh, okay.
Greg and I actually, I was on his podcast last weekend, and we're actually largely in agreement. And in fact, some of the things I thought we were in disagreement about, once we talked about it, I began to understand, oh, okay, I get where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. My thing is I get frustrated listening, and the way he answers the questions isn't the way I would answer the question, just as it isn't the same way somebody else would answer it.
Right.
So that was really the frustrating part, is I would be like, no, you're not, you know, I mean, we're generally in agreement, I think, on these issues, but I didn't care for the way he explains it all the time, because mm-hmm. I think there's other ways to put it.
Okay, gotcha. Now, was there anything specific that he said that you would like to elaborate on? I mean, I could go through all the questions with you again,
sure.
But for the sake of, you know, not, you know, being repetitive and going exactly through the same interview with a different person, maybe
right.
We can just kind of skip around and stuff like that and get into some of the deeper stuff. I'm sure you'll be happy to elaborate on some of your own personal views about things, but
right.
Is there anything specific, just curious, like, is there something that stands out above all the other responses as the one that concerned you the most or the one that you had the most desire to reply to yourself?
Oh, I wrote, you know, some stuff on my blog in response. So there were a couple of things, but a lot of it was just that. If you know, just ask kind of the same questions, I would kind of give you a different answer, but the two specific, and my memory isn't that great, so I can't recall exactly what they all were. I mm-hmm. could have taken notes.
I'd be happy to run through some questions with you that are pretty typical.
Right.
I still have my list of questions to ask them.
The specific was the response to questions about Lucifer and the way he responded to that. And it annoyed it. One of my pet peeves are mm-hmm. people who go, and so-and-so's a 32nd degree Mason. And I didn't, you know, and the way you kind of promoted on your site, that's mm-hmm. great. But I think there's a misperception out there in the world about what it means to be a 32nd degree Mason. And I didn't hear him clear that up.
Okay,
so those are
right.
the kind of examples. I'd like to, you know, clear those things up. My thing is, I think I have a talent for explaining things to people mm-hmm. in simple language. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm just full of crap, but I think I have a talent for that. And I get a fair amount of attaboys when I write blog posts. A fair amount of people come back and say, hey, way to go for saying it like it is. So I get
right.
some affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
But there is. I mean, people kind of put on airs or make something out to be bigger than it is, and I don't personally think there's any great secret about Freemasonry. I don't think there are any secrets in Freemasonry. I don't think there's anything nefarious about Freemasonry. So that's my perspective, right? And
right.
and it's not that Greg and I disagree. It's just the way he explains things isn't the same way I'd explain things.
Okay. So let me just go through some questions then, and you can, you know, feel free to take it any direction that you want to go, and I'll just let you kind of dominate that aspect of where things are going, because I'm sure there's certain things that you want to voice, and that's what I want. I want you to be able to explain some of the differences between you and Greg, because I don't want to give the misperception that Greg's opinion was, you know, all-encompassing when it comes to dealing in topics of Freemasonry. I mean, we said at the very beginning that, you know, this is his personal views. They don't reflect Freemasonry.
Right.
They're his views about as a Freemason and what he believes. And you would agree that all Freemasons have a different perspective about it.
Well, exactly. And again, this gets back to the thing where I wish he'd have been more clear upon is, not only is that his opinion, and when I talk, you know, it's my opinion. I come from a certain background, and, mm-hmm. and there's things we could talk about. You and I could talk about the New World Order. We can mm-hmm. talk about UFOs. We can talk about free energy. We can talk about all kinds of different topics. And at mm-hmm. no point would you be getting much that you wouldn't be getting the answers that represent Freemasonry. You'd just be getting what I believe, what my opinions are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't speak for Freemasonry in any respect like that. And if I have a particular belief, that doesn't mean that's what Freemasons believe. That just means that's what I believe. And I know for a fact that my personal beliefs are in the minority of most everybody. And in point of fact, that's why I belong to Freemasonry,
mm-hmm.
because it's one of the few clubs that would let me in. Because my views are not mainstream. I've got my own personal thing. And I think a lot of times, and this is what I'm coming around to, and I've said this on my blog post, it is absurd. There, as you know, Freemasonry's membership has been dwindling, but there's still, I mm-hmm. believe the numbers I've heard, are 4 million Masons worldwide.
Yeah, that's
still
impressive.
How accurate that is.
It's fading in America. It's not fading in overseas and stuff, right? I mean, it seems that, from what I understand, that, you know, European countries are doing pretty well.
It's actually doing real well in America right now, too. You can't offset the fact that every, you know, belonging to Freemasonry was, you know, I mean, I don't know what half of, you know, half of the people in the men in the country belong to Masonry in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. and those guys are all dying, and there's no way we could bring in more members faster than those guys are moving along. But mm-hmm. right now we actually are in an uptake. There's lodge after lodge after lodge that hadn't brought in a new member in 10 years, and now they're bringing in, you know, guys left and right, and I can talk about why I think that is and so forth.
Sure.
But the thing is, if you go to KingSolomonsLodge.org, which is a blog aggregator for Freemason weblogs, mm-hmm. I mean, think about how absurd that is. You know, we're supposed to be all about secrets and stuff, and here's a whole bunch of Freemasons getting on the internet shooting their mouths off. Mm-hmm. And this is a blog aggregator, and there's, you know, roughly somewhere around 24 Freemason weblogs, and some are more active than others. Mm-hmm. And imagine that. There's 4 million people in the world. But you get the impression on the internet as if these 24 guys speak for all of Masonry, and it's way out of perspective. Mm-hmm. And the guys who are on Masonry on blogs, you know, they're nice guys. I like them, but they are not representative of percentage wise. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the shtick I take on my own personal weblog. I try to say, you know, it's all well and good, but let's get down to brass tacks. And the vast majority of Freemasons in America are not blogging. They don't really have a whole lot to feel like saying.
Right.
And what we do, you know, I kind of come back to this, and this is my theme, is if the average person knew what Freemasons actually did, they wouldn't even believe it. They think, how, I can't believe that's all there is to it, and that is so boring, I can't imagine they're wasting their time.
So going off of
what
that
we
thought,
do is basically boring, you know, to most people.
So
I kind of come from that perspective of kind of the mainstream Masonry, mm-hmm. And I don't think that the blogs and the stuff you hear on the internet, while they represent those individual guys' views, I don't know that it's in proportion.
Okay, understandable. Well, let's go off of that thought. You said that, you know, that most people would find it boring, and I just want to know, you know, what do you see in Freemasonry? What made you decide to join?
Did you hear my interview on...
I have actually. I'm really sorry. I intended to do that, but this week has been pretty radical for me as far as time. So I haven't had a chance
problem.
To do
I
that.
He asked me the same question then, and I gave the answer. So I don't know how much I was repeating myself, but I know to your audience, it's a fresh answer.
Right.
I'll just keep it real short.
Mm-hmm.
I joined because a good friend of mine moved away. There was an article in Newsweek magazine about how Freemasons were opening themselves up. I didn't know anything about Freemasonry at the time. I didn't have a positive or negative opinion. I literally knew nothing about it. And I started reading about it, and it sounded interesting to me. I talked with my dad. He had a very high opinion of Freemasonry. He found out that I'd had relatives who had been Masons.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined primarily, my primary motivation was to make new friends. And it succeeded wildly in that, affair, and we can have a, you know, a 20-hour conversation about philosophy and everything else, but at the end of the day, in the United States, Freemasonry is a fraternity. In fact, it's that way around the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, bottom line, it's a fraternity. It's a bunch of guys hanging out and socializing, and that was why I joined. It remains the core appeal of it to me,
mm-hmm.
is hanging out with these guys. It's my male companionship, and I surround myself with guys who I think are, you know, they're pretty cool guys.
Mm-hmm.
We have shared values and interests, so that's what drew me to it, why I still, you know, I'm still kind of a cheerleader for it, because it's succeeded in that.
Okay.
And I've met unbelievably nice guys who do anything for me, and just incredible character. So that was why I joined, why I'm still involved, and that's where I'm coming from.
Now, what is it about Freemasonry that you think would be perhaps more desirable than, say, joining an Elks Lodge or something to that effect? I mean, there's multiple fraternities where you can accomplish pretty close to the same thing. Why Freemasonry? What makes it special?
It's a good question. The Elks Lodge, my dad's an elk, and there's a lot of, in a lot of respects, it's a drinking club. And then my dad actually came to one of my Freemason things. He goes, "Man, that's just like what we do in the Elks Club." I'm like, "Yeah, everybody borrows the same ceremony. If you join a college fraternity, most of what you're going to see is going to look like Freemason ceremony. It's mm-hmm. all been kind of borrowed back and forth." Mm-hmm. And I joined the Lions Club in my community, so I actually am a Lion, and I wrote a post recently about that, about, you know, why in the world, you know, why is this appealing and not that? And it has to do with something that I think is the mystery. I think it's the mystery, and I actually made, when I wrote about this, I made a blog post. I said, if anybody out there has a degree in psychology and can explain this to me, please let me know. And then nobody did. mm-hmm. There's something really strangely satisfying about performing a ceremony, or what mm-hmm. we call a ritual. Mm-hmm. There's something, it's meditative. It's like, why do you go to a yoga, it's like, why would you go to a yoga studio and do yoga?
Right.
So somebody goes to a yoga studio, they walk out, and having gone through those exercises, they feel calm, they feel relaxed, it's meditative.
Mm-hmm.
And the specific case is, when I go to a Lions Club meeting, the president sits down, he says, "I call this meeting to order and ask the secretary to read the minutes." And that takes a couple of seconds. When mm-hmm. I go into a Freemason lodge, we go through this very involved ceremony that I guarantee you most people, they show this stuff on the History Channel, and the History Channel shows, you know, a few lurid looking things, but they don't show actually what we do in the lodge. They're showing like this few little select clips, and mm-hmm. if people saw what we did, they'd go, "That's remarkably boring." And I'm the first person to say that it's remarkably boring.
Yeah.
And I've told this anecdote before, is when I joined the lodge, I would go, and I walked out the door, and the thought was, that was the most boring thing I've ever done in my life. Got in my car, I wonder when the next meeting is.
Right.
There's something about going through a ritual which is very calming and meditative, and that's what appeals to me. And when I go to the Lions Club and we rush through our meeting really quick, it feels like they've kind of taken the ceremony out of it,
uh-huh.
you know, and there's something about that that's appealing. I don't know why, but it is.
So that's why you feel like Freemasonry is more appealing, per se, than any other lodge, because they focus more on the ceremonial aspect.
I mean, that's what we do. That's what
right.
makes us different than everybody else, is that we have this elaborate ceremony that we've been keeping around for hundreds of years, and
mm-hmm.
we try really hard not to change it, and
mm-hmm.
I can't explain it. I mean, is there anything in your life you do that's a particular ritual that you find? I mean, I'll give you something that if you ask me that question, I would
mm-hmm.
say going to a baseball game. Baseball game is a very elaborate ritual if you're really into baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, you take an average person, they think baseball, not someone who's not been exposed to it, they just think baseball is incredibly boring.
Right.
I'm like, well, you don't understand the excitement of a 3-2 pitch with, you know, with runners that, you know, you get involved in that. And there's something about a ritual that you go through, the familiarity of it, that's very calming and relaxing. And I think in my blog post, I put it as, I think we all human beings must have a little bit of OCD
mm-hmm.
because we perform these rituals and they calm us down. And do you have something in your life, something you do that's ritualistic that calms you?
I would say DJ. I'm a DJ myself. I get into my music and I can just play records forever, you know, and just go through my mixing and all the stuff that I do. And that, to me, that's what it relaxes me. It's my yoga. But I do understand right. where you're coming from with that aspect of things. And involving the ritual, okay, and I'm going to try to be as unspecific as possible, because I know that there's some things that you're not supposed to talk about.
Well, that's the other thing I want to comment. I think I told you this in the email. Ask
mm-hmm.
me anything. I'll talk about most anything.
Most anything. Okay.
Yeah.
That's encouraging, but before we go into that, first let me say for the record, I know this doesn't matter to you, but I know that people listening are going to want to know what
sure.
degrees have you attained?
I am in a Blue Lodge. I've gone through the third degree, and I'm Worshipful Master, which is president of a lodge that I'm trying to help kind of recover, me and some friends of mine. It's a lodge that's 168 years old, and it was about to close its doors, and I got me and my friends together, and we're we're getting that lodge going again. So I'm the master there, and then I'm senior deacon, which these each of the there's like seven officer positions, and they each have a different title. And I'm senior deacon at my main lodge, and I am in the shrine, but I mean I don't do anything in shrine but pay my dues and I think I drive my car in the shrine service.
That's interesting, because I was under the impression, and maybe I'm wrong, but that you had to attain a certain degree before you were even allowed to do so. Is that ancillary body of the Scottish Rite, I think? Is that right?
No. That used to be the case, is that you had to be either go through the York Rite or the Scottish Rite to become go in the shrine. That was largely... there's a weird sort of symbiotic relationship between the shrine and the rest of the other Masonic organizations, because the shrine's really just it's a party club. I mean, it's just for people to have. That's its theme: is we're Masons, we're good people, but guess what? We think that having fun and having a good time and raising money for charity, that's their philosophy, and their ritual is really. I found the shrine ritual to be quite. I was not impressed. It was grown men wearing costumes, and it looked really silly to me. And
right.
That's fine. The shrine is silly.
Well, yeah. The little cars aren't silly enough.
Right.
You know.
So traditionally, you're right. You had to go through. But and the idea there was really they just want to make sure everybody got their money, because all these organizations you belong to, you pay dues.
Right.
And it costs about $150 a year to be in the Scottish Rite, costs another $150 a year to be in the shrine, then your local lodge is going to be maybe $100. And in each one in and of itself, $100, no big deal. But next thing you know, when you belong to Scottish Rite, York Rite, shrine, and you're paying $500-$600 a year in dues, for a lot of people, that's some serious money. And
right. And
what used to happen and still happens is, the shrine's where people want to go because it's where they have fun, but the rules are you got to be a Mason first. And a lot of people would like go through the York. The only way York Rite and Scottish Rite could get members was that rule that you had to be a York Rite and that before you went into the shrine. But they got rid of that rule, and there's a lot of discussion about the shrine getting rid of the rule of having you even have to be a Mason.
Oh, wow.
So it's just the way the world is. We're not... You know, people are not joining clubs anymore. I mean, it doesn't have to do with masonry. I mean, it's everywhere. People do not join clubs. It's not what they think is a good use of their time. And all of these, it doesn't matter whether it's Lions Club, Rotary, Masons, Shriners, they're all losing membership. They can't get people to come. It's what we talk about. What's the problem? What aren't we offering these people, et cetera?
Okay.
And one of the things that Greg didn't talk about that I would like to talk about is to dissuade this notion that being a 32nd degree Mason means something or other. And to become a 32nd degree Mason means that you wrote a check for $150 and you showed up at the Scottish Rite Temple on a Saturday and you watched your friends put on about five plays. Even though there's 32 degrees, you only get to see about five plays. And then they give you a little hat, shake your hand, and say, you're a member of the Scottish Rite. And most 90-some-odd% of those people will never be seen ever again. So that's the reality. If anyone says, ooh, he's a 32nd degree Mason, it means he saw five plays on a Saturday and wrote a check for $150.
Right.
I mean, that's a 32nd degree Mason. And what's interesting is I was at Lodge earlier this week, and there was this four boxes filled with books top to top. And just sitting on a table. And I'm like, what are these? And apparently one of the members of our lodge passed away, and his wife donated all these books to the lodge. And it was awesome. I was going through all of these, and one of them I found was this big book. It was the history of the Scottish Rite from 1880-something-something through 18-something-something, and it was the whole time when the Scottish Rite was being created and Albert Pike was creating all the degrees, and it was great reading through this thing. I haven't had time to read it, of course, in detail. I just skimmed it. Have every letter Albert Pike ever wrote to anybody, and it's hysterical because they just had created Scottish Rite. Here it is, 160 years later, and sure enough, What are we going to do about these people being made members of the Scottish Rite in one day? We've got to stop that. All the things people complain about today existed back then. It was, mm-hmm. how come they're not really getting the deeper meanings of the lesson and da-da-da-da-da? And it was there since day one.
Right.
And the Scottish Rite plays, and you can read them all online. It's not like they're secret or anything.
Right. It's long reading,
they have a storyline that involves events with King Solomon's temple is the stories, but the meaning, if you read the commentary, is they all, each one is teaching various lessons in morality.
Right.
And what a good Scottish Rite Basin is supposed to do is, you know, almost devote his lifetime philosophically to try to digest and understand. But nowadays, yeah, it's a one-day affair. Boom. And the reason I haven't done it is, one, I'm not ready to pay that much extra dues, and I'm involved in other organizations that are taking up a lot of my time, like the Lions Club, and I'm involved in DMOLE, which is basically Freemasons for Kids.
Right.
And my son's involved, and I have a lot to do with that. So I want to go in the Scottish Rite, it's not on my agenda right now.
Gotcha. Now, I'm looking through your list of blogs. I mean, you're pretty involved. I mean, even at least if you're half as involved as you are in person as you are online, like, you're pretty involved. I mean, you got, what, 10 blogs that you're blogging on about Freemasonry? Is that right?
No, I only have one Freemason blog.
I'm a
programmer by profession.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'm a computer programmer by profession, so I have a programming blog, and that's true. I do have a blog for my DMOLE website, but all I do is just put pictures on there.
Okay. I'm seeing multiple.
The only blog I maintain actively is my personal blog, and it's not actually a Freemason blog. It's just a personal blog.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very odd when I suddenly got picked up as some sort of Freemason blog. What's really weird is... and I mentioned this, and you know how people like hire consultants to get themselves ranked higher on search engines,
right?
Pay lots of money.
Uh-huh.
Well, Google bought Blogger, and I'm not the first person who's discovered this. But if you were active blogging on Blogger, you are ranked so high on Google search, it is unbelievable.
Really,
and I was amazed to find out. You can do it right now if you're a computer. Type in how to become a Freemason. And as of yesterday, I was the number 2 hit on the internet for that.
I mean,
out of the entire planet Earth, anybody go, I wonder how I become a Freemason. I show up above every Grand Lodge in the world. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, it is.
And I feel a certain responsibility for that. I probably get about 20 people a day come to my website because they type those exact words. Because I get trackbacks and I can follow that. And I've got various posts on my website, some more humorous than others, just kind of trying to explain in common sense terms, you know, why would you want to join this thing, you know? And I've already told you, you know, the main reason is because you want to make some new friends, and who in the world has too many friends, for Christ's sake?
Okay, I just want to let everybody know we are taking calls. If you're interested in speaking with John Radcliffe about Freemasonry, the number to call is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. So let's get into some other stuff, and I'll keep my eyes peeled for any phone calls. Basically, you know, we touched a little bit on the ritual. We touched on the history of the Scottish Rite. Like you said, you found that book, and you talked about how some of the deeper meanings were being neglected. Grant, I'm not sure if I misunderstood, but it seemed like, from my perception of the conversation you were having with Greg, at least what I could read of it over, like, you know, blog comments,
sure.
is that you had a different view about some of the deeper aspects of Freemasonry. He basically has more of what would be referred to as an esoteric Freemason view. You're not an esoteric Mason, am I correct?
Well, I guess I am, and this is interesting. It's how we use language, somebody will go, what's esoteric mean? And you go look up the textbook definition of it, and you know, that's what it means. And I go, well, yeah, that's not what it means when person A says it, or person B says it, or person C says it.
Right.
So I had a notion in my mind what people meant when they said they're esoteric Freemasons, and I actually had incorrectly assumed that Greg fit into a particular version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And after having spoken to him, I think I now realize if I follow his definition, well, then I'm an esoteric Freemason. But but it, you know, it depends on the term of the definition. So I just had this revelation, by the way, recently. And what Greg is getting at is there's a thing in a lot of Freemason lodges where they go to the lodge, and instead of really getting involved in the ritual and the philosophy and the symbols, all they care about is, all right, when are we doing our next barbecue fundraiser? How about that? How are we doing on that scholarship fund? And very practical, down-to-earth matters that are part of what their lodge does.
Okay.
Well, the people who go to those kinds of lodges feel a little frustrated because they joined because they wanted to be have more of the philosophy and all of that.
Okay.
And way Greg expressed it, he when he says esoteric, he means that you are engaged in Freemasonry, and esoteric Freemasonry is someone who is concerned with the philosophy of it, the symbols, the deeper meanings.
Right.
Well, yeah. I'm an esoteric Freemason, if that's the definition, because I care very much about the philosophy and would love, you know, happy to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I thought. If you ever have you ever read C.W. Ledbetter?
Yes.
That man is a kook and a kook and a half, okay? And him and Annie Besant and back in, you know, you research this stuff more than I do. You know this, like, incredible, it's called Theosophy. When did Theosophy?
Right, Blavatsky. Blavatsky is the founder of Theosophy.
Right. But what was the time frame?
It was in the early 1800s. Well, it depends. Theosophy is said to be founded in the mind of Blavatsky sometime during her path to the Tibet and to India. Where she was channeling some spirit or some crap like that.
Right. So there
sometime in the 1800s.
And I don't want to get anybody upset.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I should say this or not, but there's a religion that was created in the mid 1800s called Mormonism, and this was a invented religion. Okay, well, I should just keep my mouth shut. Right. So there is a time in our culture. There was a time in American history where people, just like the average person, was like really into like seances and some really out there stuff.
Right.
And a lot of them were Freemasons. Right. I mean, we don't have a lock on, you know, it's not like everybody that walks in our door. We can't control what people believe at their personal level. So there have been plenty of wacky people who've joined Freemasonry and written some wacky stuff. And Ledbetter is the premier. And I actually like Ledbetter because he's very funny to read. I mean, it's some entertaining stuff. It's so far out there, it's beyond out there.
Right.
And at least he explains it. My frustration and the frustration you saw on my weblog comments, and which were may have been misplaced at Greg Stewart, is there's a bunch of people out on the internet that call themselves esoteric Freemasons. Then you ask them, well, what do you mean by that? And then they go, well, it can't be explained in words. And I'm like, screw you. I mean, the English language is a powerful tool, and we can explain. You know, it's like if you look at the story of Helen Keller, okay, deaf, dumb, and blind, and she was taught, I mean, look at the progress that woman made. Mm-hmm. So I fundamentally disagree that someone sees ghosts or whatever paranormal phenomena. Maybe I don't see ghosts. I don't believe you can't explain that to me. I don't think you can't. Or maybe a better analogy, a little on the edge, but let's say LSD. I've never taken LSD, right? That doesn't mean someone who has can't try to explain it to me. So I get very frustrated with these guys who kind of put on airs. And I don't know, I kind of, in my mind, I assume they were all, like, Ledbetter, that they are all, you know, they're doing a ritual. I'm doing a ritual, and I'm, you know, like I said, to me, it's like yoga. I find it satisfying that I've done it correct and right. And I figure these guys are sitting there, and they're seeing spirit beings, and I have no idea what.
Okay.
But if you've read the same material I've read, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of doubt in what Ledbetter's talking about. I mean, he's out there.
No, yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that from my perspective, you know, and I've explained this on other podcasts, that the idea of Theosophy or the New Age, because that's really what it is, Theosophy is just occultism repackaged, and they call it New Age. I even talked to a guy who owns a pretty prominent New Age store in my area, and I, you know, I said, you know, that I started using the word occultism. He goes, oh, we don't use that word. And I said, well, why don't you use it? That's what it is. And he goes, well, that's because it scares people away. And I said, so what do you use as an alternative? And he goes, New Age. I'm like, okay.
Well, you're absolutely right. Theosophy is New Age, but what's really kind of interesting, and you've read you know, I know kind of the books you've read stuff. Mm-hmm. When you go into a lot of the stuff in people who've made commentary and they get into comparative religion and they walk through religions, you know, even the New Age isn't new. Theosophy right. wasn't the New Age. A lot of this alludes to Eastern philosophy and Eastern religions. Not so much Buddhism, but Buddhism to some extent, a lot more Hinduism. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you look at those people like the Annie Besants of the world, they're like, you know, and there are seven yogis around the world who are live life eternal. I mean, a lot of it goes back. I mean, heck, the Beatles went over to talk to a yogi, right?
Right, right.
So do you know how old Hinduism is? Hinduism makes Christianity look like it's some new upstart religion. Hinduism is that old.
Right.
So these ideas, one of the things that annoys me is when people act like these are new ideas. They're not new ideas.
Right.
They've been
just
around
like
forever.
About new age.
and are they mainstream? Well, maybe not in Indianapolis, Indiana, they're not mainstream, but I guarantee you if you're walking down, you know, streets of Bangladesh, they are. So mm-hmm. it's all culture. You come from a different culture, different belief system.
Right.
Those guys back then, they were influenced by Eastern thought, and they wrote about it, and yada, yada. And I believe in freedom of religion. I mean, if people want to believe whatever they want to believe, that's their business.
Okay.
And if it makes you feel better to call it a cult, go ahead. But, I mean, I come from a perspective, and as I said, I'm not mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a perspective lived this way. When I look at Freemasonry, different people hear that word, and ideas are conjured up in their head, and they get different views, and especially maybe people who are into more sort of conspiracy thought, they hear something that's secret, there are men of power involved, and they get ideas in their head. But when I hear Freemasonry, all I think of is the American Revolution. To me, that's what it's all about,
mm-hmm.
is those, you know, those principles that are in the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, those are Freemason documents. So you want to know what Freemasonry stands for? Read the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Problem solved. And Benjamin Franklin was a deist. He was also a great communicator, and he was a great Freemason. He was Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania, and he did not, his personal religious beliefs were not, I mean, he didn't make a lot of doubts about it. He was a deist, which, if people don't know what a deist is, it's basically an atheist. I mean, he mm-hmm. a deist believes that God created the universe and was never seen again. That's what a deist believes.
Right.
Now, I'm not a deist. I personally am a pantheist.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that God is the universe, and we continue to see him on a continual and daily basis. In other words, there's this notion that, you know, who created creation? And I just say, well, you know, creation's God enough for me. So mm-hmm. in either case, whether you're a deist or you're a pantheist, your views are of God or deity are at a very large scale. They're not necessarily crammed into some particular church or particular dogma or whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of a theme you see in a lot of these philosophical Masonic writings are these ideas of that, you know, God is a lot bigger than your little church on the corner.
Right.
God's something way bigger than that. So
let me ask
that's
you,
where I come from. You know, that's just uh-huh. me personally. That's all.
Okay. Let me ask you a few questions, kind of building off of some of the things that you said. Number one, you talked about Ledbetter and how crazy he was. I want to get your insight on what you feel about Albert Pike. But before you do, let me bring in the second question, which is...
Sure.
What was the second question? Okay, was about the... I want to get into more of the esoteric symbolism, like you talked about. You mentioned earlier, and I meant to say something about this, is that the different degrees, basically it's a bad play and a funny hat. I mean, that's what it amounts to as far as you climbing the degrees. But with every single one of those rituals that you are involved in, you're supposed to pick up new lessons. Is that correct? Would you say that that's true?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So with each one of those new lessons, I think the only way – now, you said that, you know – some people come from a more conspiratorial view. Hey, I'm totally going to admit to you, I'm coming from that perspective. I don't believe that Freemasonry is equivalent to New Age. I believe a lot of, like, when I read New Age, it told me to look into Freemasonry. I looked into Freemasonry and I was like, okay, I can see some of the same idealisms, I can see some of the same language and lingo and investigation, but I see totally two completely different outcomes to that investigation. You know, with New Age, they took it very literally. I mean, literally, they look at all religions as being the same, and it seems like, you know, it's part of a big religious spiritual soup, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, that's what it looked like they were doing, and a lot of that was really out there. When I study Freemasonry, what I seem to get from them is a philosophic approach. It's almost absent of more of its supernatural, mystic, or what's the word I would be looking for? There's a word that Pike used that...
I don't know, but supernatural sounded good to me.
Yeah, the supernatural aspects, which he basically says, if you look at it from a pure philosophic standpoint, that if you look at it from a pure philosophic standpoint, that there are lessons being taught there, and there is a lot of similarities between what Freemasons believe versus everybody else. And it leads me to believe some things about Freemasonry. With that, I won't go too into that right now. Just go ahead and...
Well, I actually listened to you on another podcast, and because I wanted to prepare myself a little bit for this interview. And then you were on, like, the 33rd degree parallel thing, and I heard you. And one comment you made, and this is something I wanted to respond to. Actually, I think I did respond to you either in a blog post or somewhere you didn't hear, but I'll repeat it here. Which is, I think you said in the conversation, your study of Masonry had led you to believe that ultimately, when you go through all the philosophy and you work your way all the way up the food chain, is that it reaches a point where it's presenting atheism.
Well, I think essentially,
that's
it's,
what you said.
Okay, well, let me clarify that just to make sure that you understand it perfectly. I'm not saying that it tells you that there's atheism. I think it hints at it being atheism, and you're supposed to kind of get it. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. And you're allowed to believe whatever you want. Freemasonry never walks up with a certificate and says, okay, you can have this if you can answer correctly. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they have that presentation. However, if you look at the different connections between, you know, all the different philosophies and the history, like, it's very similar to what you would get in, like, a comparative religion course. I noticed that. I took a comparative religion course.
All comparative religion.
Right. It's very similar. And except for they go deeper into things, and they even get into things that, well, comparative religion sticks with more of the popularized religions, and they focus more on those and the comparisons between them. The Freemasonry tends to focus, it seems like, more on the religions that are less known. You know what I'm saying? And
no, that's actually not true.
You wouldn't say that's true? Okay.
No, not at all. No, I mean, the thing is, Freemasonry is kind of interesting. Is you know, they have things as layers of secrets. You things are revealed to you in progression. Some things at earlier levels are told you have intentional falsehoods to not. And there is a scandal, right? I think there's this scandal in Freemasonry that's in all of its teachings. But the thing is, for me, it wasn't scandalous. Because when I joined, I'm already coming from, you know, what I'll consider my own personal enlightened point of view, that after reading all the material and seeing where I think it's going, it's no scandal to me. But to someone who's been raised with a particular dogmatic belief system, there are things in it that are scandalous because they were raised with a particular mindset. And that's why Pike's thing is called morals and dogma, is there's a very clear distinction between morals and dogma. Morals are what a person should do. What is the right thing that you should do? How should you conduct yourselves? Mm-hmm. And let's not lose sight of the fact, in addition to all the comparative religion stuff, the bulk of our teachings, and the main reason I find it all appealing, is that we present over and over and over again a reminder about morality and how we should conduct ourselves. And it is, you know, that we say we take good men and make them better. That's not bull crap. That's what we're trying to do. There's all kinds of life lessons. I mean, do you know what the compasses stand for? I mean, you know that, right?
The what now? The compass?
The compasses.
I couldn't hear what you said.
The compass in the square and compass. You know,
oh,
compass,
right. You say compass, and I'm used to hearing camp. Yeah, no problem.
No, compass.
I've heard representations of that. I don't know what to believe personally myself, but it's basically
it just means to circumscribe your passions.
Right.
It means that you're going to keep yourself contained. We know people who fly off the handle, who lose their temper, who we know people have, that's a negative trait, right? To restrain yourself, to realize that you should be calm and centered. That's what the compasses mean. We say it. I mean, it's not like it's a secret or anything. I mean, we say it over and over again. And the square means we square our actions, meaning we're honest, that if somebody accidentally gives us $20 in change when it was supposed to be 10, we give them back. I mean, it's just good old fashioned Boy Scout stuff.
Right.
Doesn't matter. A lot of people don't conduct their lives that way. Let's be honest. A lot of people need those reminders. Now, you might say, well, that's what I go to church for. Well, that's right. That's what you go to church for. But that's where we get into the difference between morals and dogma. When you go to a church, maybe the preacher's going to get up there and talk about morals and morality, but he's also going to talk about dogma. What's dogma? Dogma just means the rules of that church. That church has got rules. It says, we believe X, Y, Z. Why do we believe it? Dogma. I can't tell you why we believe it. There's not a I can't give you proof or evidence. It's called faith. You believe that. And that's what we, in Freemasonry, that's why I honestly believe in no way, shape, or form are we a religion. Because if the only thing you concern yourself is with morality, you're not a religion. Okay? Mm-hmm. No one will ever, I don't care if you're 999th degree Freemason, nobody's going to tell you what to believe. They're not going to tell you Jesus Christ is or is not your personal savior. They're not going to tell you anything about what you're supposed to believe about God or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how many high degrees.
Right.
Now, we're going to tell you that you should be honest, that you should be a good man, that you should be truthful to your word. We're going to tell you that 6 ways from Sunday.
Okay.
But we are not going to tell you what to believe. That's just not part of it. Now, there is a philosophy, an undercurrent in the commentary and so forth, and you had it dead on when you said, it's there if somebody wants to take it away.
Right.
But if they don't want to take it away,
we
don't want to rattle anybody's cage. If you're a devout Christian and you believe Jesus Christ is your personal savior, there's no one ever going to tell you otherwise, and there's nothing in Masonry that will necessarily change your mind in that regard. But
okay.
I believe that what the lessons are pointing at is a form of universalism. It's not atheism, it's just the opposite.
Right.
It's the observation that if you believe God created the universe, and then play a game with your, let's say, I don't know what your personal belief, do you believe God created the universe?
Yes.
Okay. How many gods created the universe? How many gods created the universe?
One.
Okay. How many religions are there?
God.
Shitloads.
Yeah.
Okay. There's only one God. No matter, and you read, it's in Pike, it's in Manly, it's in all these other commentaries. Mankind has had religions. We make religions all the time because we want to connect to deity. We want to connect to God. And some religions have some things in common and don't have other things in common. Some religions think they've got the only truth, other people. But at the end of the day, those religions don't affect God. Because there's only one God. There can be 1,000 religions. There's only one God. I mean, that's just basic logic. And
right.
And there is nothing in Masonry and those teachings that is heading towards atheism. It's heading towards this acknowledgement that's why, I already admitted, personally, I'm a deist or pantheist. And when we use phrases like the grand architect of the universe, I like that. Okay, to me, the God that created the universe is the grand architect. I like that. And what this snaps of, I've heard this phrase because I've been in debates on the internet. It's a phrase people like to use. It's called universalism.
Right.
Well, you're a universalist. The philosophy that there is only one true God and religions are, just kind of flavors of the week. That's called universalism. And there are a lot of people in our culture that are scandalized by that. I mean, they'll say you're a universalist just like they were saying, you're a baby killer or something.
Right.
So I think that's the scandal, to be quite honest. I think that's the hidden secret. That's the scandal. I don't find it scandalous. Obviously, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, those are scandalous ideas. Those kinds of ideas are scandalous. And even today in our culture, there are people. But is it a cult? Is it witchcraft? I mean, that's just all silliness and nonsense. And that's simply anybody who goes down that view, they're just projecting their own personal stuff because it's not there. I mean, if you've read the books, it's philosophy, it's comparative religion. And unless you read Ledbetter,
right.
You're not going to find anything occult, even in Pike. It's just going to be a bunch of commentary. And my personal opinion of Pike, I don't like the way he writes. I find his writing to be unreadable. It's just as simple as that. And I look at it this way. You want to talk to me about, here's this great leader in Freemasonry, Albert Pike, and I'm going, okay, he's not exactly my role model. My role model is Benjamin Franklin. Mm-hmm. And how did Benjamin Franklin write? Benjamin Franklin wrote so clearly, so coherently. He changed the world. He changed people dramatically. His writings today are still, are dazzling. I've read biographies, autobiographies. I am impressed with Benjamin Franklin up one side and down the other. And to me, he's the model of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And he writes incredibly clearly and very coherently about principles and ideas and about how a man should... He has this whole thing in his autobiography where he talked about where he went on clear exercises to try to improve himself and make himself a better man. So that, to me, if I want to look for, my reference for Freemasonry, that's mine, is Benjamin Franklin. Personally, I find Albert Pike unreadable. That's why I cannot intelligently comment about him, because I can't read it. It's just too turgid. Uh-huh. Now, there's other guys like Manly P. Hall. I think he wrote something called The Secret Teachings of All Ages, which is largely all just a commentary on comparative religion. Right. I found that pretty easy to read.
Mm-hmm. So,
did you read that?
Yeah, I own it. Manly P. Hall, I thought was pretty awesome, and it's really interesting because you bring up Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall clearly thought that there was some higher element involved in Freemasonry. He says it pretty candidly in multiple writings. And I guess that let's get into some of the conspiracy stuff. Okay.
Sure.
People believe that Freemasonry. I have my own views. This is not saying what I believe because my views are usually totally different than other people's. But a lot of people believe that Freemasonry has higher degrees, or the higher degrees matter, and there's the history of the formation of the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati by Weishaupt, and there's been a movement of people who believe that organization, the Illuminati, still exists today, and that Freemasonry is used kind of like as a recruiting ground for this higher order of people controlling the world, so to speak. And now, of course, within that, there's a whole bunch of different stuff. Some people, it goes all the way from Freemasons and the Illuminati literally worship Lucifer to it being, symbolic. Or, I'm saying there's all the... So I'm trying to encapsulate everybody in a very mild way.
There's a lot of ground. One of the things I like to explain is that Freemasonry is not the same today as it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You can find people who were Freemasons who wrote various things. No one speaks for Freemasonry. Freemasonry in the United States of America is terribly fractured because every single state has its own Grand Lodge. It is literally impossible for Freemasons to organize in any coherent way because of the way our Grand Lodge system is set up. And maybe I don't need to belabor this point because I did listen into the 33rd parallel thing. Uh-huh. And that guy who's, he's pretty far out there on the conspiracy spectrum, but I must have heard him say 20 times during that interview, the Blue Lodge guys are okay. He said that over and over again. They're good guys. You don't need to worry about them. They're not up to any harm. So can we just let that one go and just agree the guys at your local lodge are good guys and they're not part of some grand conspiracy? Can we agree on that point?
Yeah, I can agree with that all the way up to the highest degrees. So,
So the Scottish Rite, as I said, the Scottish Rite is people go there, they watch a play on a Saturday. As far as a 33rd degree Mason, which people like to think that's secret, one of my best friends is a 33rd degree Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, awesome man. 33rd degree Mason is an honorary title that is given for people who've given service. You don't get to be a 33rd degree Mason unless you've contributed for years. So my buddy is a 33rd degree Mason. He has been involved in Masonry, charity, local community stuff for his whole life. I don't know his exact age, but he's in his 60s, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he was given that. It was a great honor. I know another guy who was involved in other... And so the people I know who are 33rd degree Masons, I know they were awarded that honor. It is just that, an honor. So it's like you worked your butt off for 20 years. Nobody ever paid you. You did all this without needs for a thank you. It's an honor. Now,
okay.
So that said, do conspiracies exist? Well, of course they exist. Human beings are conspiratorial creatures. Anytime two human beings go in a room and try to do something that's in secret that is going to affect or control others, that's a conspiracy. And we have proof of tons of conspiracies. And in fact, I contributed to your website the other day. I sent in a PayPal donation right after I saw a video that you posted that I thought was excellent. You do great work on your website.
Thank you. that
there needs to be due diligence. There are a lot of conspiracies in the history of our country. There have been some terrible, terrible abuses. Do I think that there are Masons who have been part of conspiracies? Well, sure, of course, and non-Masons have been part of conspiracies. Biggest conspiracies happening in our country right now, we know, are at the corporate level.
Mm-hmm.
Our corporations who are, you know, they're not, it's fairly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally believe in grand, all-arching conspiracies, but mm-hmm. I believe in millions and zillions of conspiracies because they exist and
right.
we see them. There's nothing in Masonry, and that was what kind of what I got was in the 33rd degree parallel interview. On the one hand, he's saying, you know what, those Blue Lodge guys, they're okay, they're not the problem. But then, two sentences later, he's using a tone in his voice that sounds very damning. I'm
mm-hmm.
like, but you just said they're good guys. So I think there's nothing in the structure of Masonry as it exists today that supports any of that. I will say, historically, if you want to go back in history, whether it's this Illuminati, you know, the Bavarian Illuminati or other things, historically, yeah, there's a lot of stuff, and there's reasons for it, and I think that it's fascinating to study mm-hmm. and read about that sort of thing. This is my personal pet peeve, and I'll try to be careful because I offend people, but. We used to have in Europe, but on the planet Earth, you know, you could be burned at the stake if you did not worship the right religion. Okay, this isn't some fantasy. This is reality, and this happened for hundreds of years. Now, for hundreds of years, mankind, especially in Europe, was under a situation where a neighbor could simply accuse him of something. And he could end up not just losing everything, but losing his life or even being burned at stake, boiled in oil. I mean, this is, I'm not making this stuff up. This
right,
really
right.
Happened.
No, this is real, yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, don't you think, in terms of someone with a person now of a clear conscience, don't you think that that person who was burned at the stake because he didn't believe in you know what religion I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic religion, okay? He didn't
mm-hmm.
believe in the Pope. Don't you think that, you know, 1600 whatever, that guy should have had a right to believe in whatever religion he wanted?
Absolutely.
Don't you believe that?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I believe that a lot of Freemasonry, what Freemasonry was involved in and why there was so much secrecy in Freemasonry had to do with just that. These were men who could get together and be in a situation where they knew no one else was going to, use a modern term, narc on them.
Right.
And when I look at the freedoms that were fought, I mean, basically Freemasonry is wrapped up in the Protestant Reformation and the Enlightenment. Okay? I mean, you know that, right? I mean,
right.
It's our history, okay? And I happen to think the Enlightenment and Freemason and the Protestant Reformation were good things largely for the world. They helped get rid of tyrants. It overthrew monarchies, dictatorships. It brought us freedoms. It brought us the American Revolution and the American Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I see these all as good things. And I look at Masonry historically and I see it as this incredible, powerful force for freedom, for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very positive view of it in that regard.
Interesting.
That mm-hmm. said, you're right. I mean, the same exact formula that was used to keep people safe during the Protestant Reformation, that same exact formula, yeah, could some conspiratorial people get together and get up to no good? Absolutely. And we know that happened, by the way, over in Italy with the P4.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are conspiracies, but I don't like general sweeping statements. If you
right,
think there's
right.
a conspiracy, provide the facts, identify it, and that's fundamentally the problem with conspiratorial thinking, is that half the time, as soon as you don't have evidence for something, you go, aha, I have no evidence, therefore, I mean,
yeah.
There's something very seductive about conspiratorial thought.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I used to follow that stuff. I mean, I'm intellectual guy. I like to read and study lots of things. One of the things that's kind of gotten interested lately is free energy, people who believe in free energy, and they have their own conspiracy thought. They believe that free energy has been invented, you know, 100 times over, but as soon as someone invents free energy, they get killed by the, you know, and it's this mythology that they have, and they're so sure, and I just think it's all kind of fascinating.
Absolutely.
Why people believe the things they believe and what amounts for proof. And you know, I'll believe conspiracies if there's proof of it. A lot of conspiracies don't affect us. Some do, but a lot of them don't. So mm-hmm. You just kind of go, well, that's what you're doing. It's no skin off my back.
Okay.
You can't worry yourself to death about everything, can you?
Right. So let me...
Hey, Carl, you invest a lot of your personal time and energy in this. Do sometimes you feel like, why am I doing this?
I guess if you're going to get into the motivation behind why I do it, you know, the name of my website is Truth, Love, and Freedom. I believe in those principles, and when I put them in practice, I find that they flourish in my life. So I don't find it to be like some people. I listen to certain you know shows. I'm not going to name which ones because that's a big no-no. If you're going to, there are certain shows I won't listen to. In the so-called conspiracy movement, and the reason I don't is because when I walk away, I feel sick. I literally feel sick at my stomach. And that's what the intention is. The intention is to scare the crap out of you and make you...
Right.
I don't know why. I mean, I guess a lot of people won't miss a show some of these people put on because they're afraid if they do that something's going to happen. The hell, you know, all hell's going to break loose and the sky's going to fall on them.
There's actually a phenomenon happening in our culture, just to add to that, of older folks watching 24-hour news 24 hours
right.
a day.
Yeah, like Fox News is a good example. Yeah,
and you talk to your grandma or your mom.
No, I do.
Like,
I have plenty of those people.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have plenty of those people in my family that do that, and it's poison. It's poison for your soul. I'm not interested in that. However, to get into some of the conspiratorial, my perspective, like I said, there's some. The evidence is valid in some cases. It's just it seems that people in the conspiracy movement, especially in terms of things involving religion, Freemasonry, because it deals in religious mm-hmm. things, religion automatically becomes a part of it. You know, Christianity. Like I believe in freedom of choice. No matter what religion you want to belong to, that's fine. Freemasonry, for the fact that it was trying to allow people to continue to practice a faith outside of what was the accepted religion of the time, mainly Catholicism. You know, it was great that in that sense. That's wonderful, and I think anyone should be welcome to do whatever they want. I have no problem. I don't want Freemason Lodge to shut down. There are certain aspects within Freemasonry that I disagree with, and that's the same thing I told Greg, and we got into some of those things. There's definitely deeper reasons even beyond that, but let me tell you where I'm coming from so that there's a full disclosure of where I'm coming from, and you'll be free to talk to me about it if you'd like. That, and this is going to be very difficult to explain, so give me a second. Basically, from the Freemason Lodge, like you said, the operation was to conceal a faith that had been practiced prior to the takeover of the Catholic Church. And that in the suppression of certain religious beliefs and philosophies that had come about in the Enlightenment were suppressed, and they needed a place to flourish. And so they had to devise clever ways of concealing the lessons, the philosophies, the teachings that they had believed at that time period. So, I know there's this whole thing about whether or not Freemasonry came from being applicable Freemasonry, whether it was actually doing an operative, to speculative. I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence for that happening. There's some evidence. There's, you know what I'm saying? No one really knows where Freemasonry comes from, and I've heard from Freemasons so many varieties of possibilities.
Right. That's why I stick with the parts we know, because
right.
a fair amount of it to the 1700s is well enough documented. We can say, yeah, we know that part.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I don't know where Freemasonry per se came from. And there's a lot of, you know, okay, how did this get into Freemasonry? How did that get into Freemasonry? You know, because it just kind of developed on its own with little history about how it happened. So I think that what happened was as the freedom was being allowed a couple hundred years ago, which all of a sudden Freemasonry didn't really have a purpose for existing. anymore. You could just openly practice whatever religion you wanted. And it took a while. I mean, it didn't happen right off the bat, but it took a while. But eventually, you know, with the rise of Protestantism and then, you know, the founding of America and then the belief that, you know, in religious freedom, and even though there was persecution and stuff, you know, as long as you weren't doing it where people could see it, you could probably get away with it. And so Freemasonry kind of lost its meaning for a little bit there about what is the purpose of Freemasonry. And I think it's addressing that question even today because it has changed once again. But I think that
You're telling a good narrative, and actually it's lost its way a whole bunch of times, and it's reinvented itself
right.
a bunch of times, as it is right now. And the thing that makes Freemasonry kind of cool and special, or you might call creepy and scary, is the purpose of it, the meaning of it, the agenda of the people involved in it changes, mm-hmm. but the ritual largely stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, that's insanely cool to me, that I can go down to a Freemason lodge and experience something that Benjamin Franklin experienced, and it's not largely different. That's just fascinating to me, that
right.
I can go through this experience that George Washington did, or mm-hmm. or Voltaire, and that's what's cool about Freemasonry is, that's why, you know, get back to that, well, why is it different than the Elks Club and the Lions Club?
Right.
It's the fact that we've got this ceremony and we don't change it.
Mm-hmm.
So people change, agendas change, goals change, but we keep the ritual the same, and that's just really cool.
Right, absolutely. Now, to get into, like, you know, this is purely theoretical, but to get into the beginning of Freemasonry and what its purpose was, like we said, it was to bring these ideas into a place where there was the ability to have the freedom. I believe that in the ritual there is a lesson. There's lessons being taught, and I don't think it's purely morals. I think a lot of it has to do with belief systems that were concealed and what belief systems have been speculated upon. I personally believe that a lot of it originates from the mystery religions of the ancient world. This kind of pseudo-philosophic, and this gets into a lot of theoretical stuff. Nobody really knows, you know, even Freemasons don't know, but they've, you know, pondered these questions before. You know, some of the purpose between the mystery organizations of the ancient time was basically a philosophic education, if you will. And you went through and you experienced something, and there was the lower mysteries and the higher mysteries of the, you know, Eleusinian, I don't even know how to say that right, Eleusinian mystery schools. And Plato talked about that. So the question is, what was all that? And there's not a whole lot of evidence about it. It was somewhat secretive. You know, I personally believe, from what I've understood from the philosophers and stuff like that, that basically it was a way for them to recruit people of a certain mindset into a family of people. And those people ended up having a lot of clout in their area. And I think that a lot of what I've read was this, in, at least in philosophy, is this idea that the philosophers should basically have control of governments, because they at least have the understanding of what it takes to rule. If you have extremist views coming into power, you get extremist acts. You get people dying on a massive scale.
How do you reconcile that concept of recruitment when, and I don't know necessarily how it worked for the mystery schools way back then, but traditionally mm-hmm. and really strongly in Masonry, is you couldn't ask anybody to join.
Right.
That was, and that's always actually been part of this tradition,
mm-hmm.
is that it has to be a calling. You have to ask yourself. And I know, actually, I've spoken to several people, because I think that's actually a little bit cruel, where I've spoken to people where a guy was kind of bitter because his father never asked him to join.
Right.
And he's like, you know, he was a Mason for 40 years, and it kind of hurts my mm-hmm. feelings that he never asked me. And I'm sitting there going, but if you'd have asked him, you'd have made him the happiest man in the world. And
right.
It's really kind of weird. But I don't see how that fits into recruitment. When
right.
It was, literally, nowadays things are a lot more relaxed. We got bumper stickers that says, be one, ask one. But for, in the past, I mean, that was hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
You did not ask anybody. So how is that recruitment if that's a core principle of how it...
Well, I don't think recruitment was ever an aspect of the mysteries. I think what it was is that they performed these rituals, and you would attend, and you would network, and you know what I'm saying, and your involvement pursuing it was enough for them to realize that you were interested. And I think that there is a lot of talk, especially in Freemasonry, in terms of Pike, talking about the profane and how the profane, the people who, you know, would use Freemasonry as nothing but, you know, a place to come and seek their own agenda or use it as an organization to pursue certain causes, that he was very much against that. And he knew that there was a deeper philosophic lesson. He cared deeply about it.
Well, in the 1950s, especially in the United States, if you weren't a Freemason, you had difficulty doing business in a community.
Right.
And that was the reality.
Right.
And that's, I find that, you know, completely negative. So people talk about, you know, I think that was a big problem.
Right. I think that's part of the.
And fortunately, we don't have that anymore. But that was definitely in the 50s. You wanted to be. You know, you did business. I mean, I actually was doing research for this paper, and I was like, found this ad in the newspaper where, you know, local businesses were making a point of advertising that they were Masons. So
right.
You did business there.
Right. And I think that's a large reason that happened, and I'm totally in agreement with you. I think a lot of the reason that happened.
It became a fad, right? Everybody joined.
Well, I didn't think it was a fad.
And they didn't join it for the right reasons.
Right. I don't think that it was a fad as much as
people today are joining for the right reasons.
Right. I don't think it's.
I don't think you'll find anybody's joining today in 2008. Goes, I'm gonna join Freemasonry so I can get somebody who'll give me a better deal. You know, I don't think people join that way for today. Mm-hmm. In the 50s, they did. They had a notion in their head that they would gain special favor if they were a member.
Right. People had that in their head, definitely. And I think that, like I said, you know, Freemasonry had to recreate itself multiple times. I think that during that time period, with the onset of the baby boom and all that type of thing, you know, going through wars and stuff like that. I find that Freemasonry was kind of going through a spot where they're like, okay, what the hell do we do now? Well, let's just be a club.
Have you read Wilmhurst? Have you read Wilmhurst? The Meaning of Masonry?
Meaning of Masonry. I have read that, yes. Not completely.
Yeah,
but
there's a lot in his book that's all about that. All these people joining for the wrong reasons. That's the whole kind of theme of his commentary.
Right. Yeah.
They're joining for the wrong reasons. Here are the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the way, if you look at Wilmhurst and try to find out what's Freemasonry all about, well, it's all about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, that's the thing is like, you know, there were people who were involved in it, involved in creating the ritual, who had personal agendas, but they can be interpreted in different ways. And I'll show you stuff written that's just flat out says, material I've got, flat out says, from some Mason going, hey, let's be straight here. Masonry is all about Jesus Christ and our personal Savior. But we're not allowed to say that. No,
right.
I'll show you the pamphlet.
No, I agree that there's people who believe that.
Wilmhurst says the whole third degree with the whole Hiram legend is nothing but, you know, a play for that. And then they go, you know, we know that what that's. I mean, they'll say in these commentaries, we know that's what it's about, but we don't need to say it outright to people because people have a right to follow their own faith.
Right.
But let's be real here. So, and of course, there's the other argument, which I think has some merit, is that Christianity and the Knights Templar, I'm sorry, Freemasonry and the Knights Templar were a repository for Gnostic Christianity.
Right.
And I think there's actually some merit to that argument.
People don't realize that
the prior to the Nicaea Council in 300 AD, Christianity did not look like it looked afterwards. There was no one clear Christianity. There were how many different fractured versions of Christianity there were? There was sect after sect. They had their own writings. They had their own gospels. And at the Nicaea Council, the Roman Emperor goes, all right, that's Christianity, and anything that doesn't go in that, forget about it. Well, there was a ton of disaffected people whose faith had just been rejected. And I think an argument can be made that, and I think that phrase is called Gnostic Christianity. People who followed, I think they called them the Apocryphal Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
I think an argument can be made that a thread of that is what fed through to the Knights Templar. And so not that they weren't Christians, they just had a different form, different beliefs, different root structure on it. And
right.
I read a lot of stuff I think is kind of compelling on that point.
Right.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. However,
and by the way, I
had a friend of mine join.
A friend of mine joined a year ago, and he told me, he goes, "Well, that's why I'm joining because I can tell it's all actually about Gnostic Christianity, and I'm a Gnostic." And I mean, he just told that to me straight out.
Mm-hmm.
So in his mind, that you ask him what's Freemasonry, and that's the way he thinks of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you know, I totally agree with you on that, except for I would go take it back even further, pre-Gnosticism. You know, there are aspects of study that has shown that a lot of the religions in general, originating from the mystery cults of the ancient world, have had, you know, similar stories to that of Jesus Christ. You know, you got the birth, the birth, the death, resurrection scenario, the 3 days,
right,
in a tomb.
You
know,
take it one step, right? You take it one step back, and instead of saying, "Oh, well, the Gnostics were left out in the cold," well, the pagans were left out in the cold too,
right?
And all those pagan religions had been around for, you know, hundreds, if not 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awful lot of disaffected people who mm-hmm. still want to keep their beliefs going,
right?
And you see that, like, is it the Celtic Christianity kept some of those pagan elements still mm-hmm. kind of crept in for a long time, or am I misremembering that?
But I
agree with you. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That Christianity, mostly Roman Catholicism, and its impact on Western civilization was completely and utterly devastating.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Dark Ages, and we call it the Dark Ages for a reason.
Right.
They burned down the Alexandria Library. You and I would... you imagine how different our conversation would be today if the Alexandria Library hadn't been burned down?
Right.
Because we wouldn't be guessing about so much of this stuff.
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah, I agree. The Catholic Church devastated and held, and anybody who wanted to carry on that knowledge, those beliefs, I agree. I think Freemasonry or things like Freemasonry were vehicles to carry that knowledge forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, now that we kind of traced it back, I kind of believe a lot of it, mystery cults, you have the establishment of religion. This is like comparative religion stuff. You should be perfectly familiar with it. You know, dating all the way back to ancient paganism, some form of astrotheology type stuff, maybe incorporated. Who knows? We don't really know, but we guess, and this is kind of what studying this topic can teach you.
Sure.
Now, you take that to modern day and how that affects Freemasonry, and there's two aspects about it that are interesting to me. Number one, that Freemasonry has, in its lessons, as you climb the degrees, incorporated not teachings per se on the aspect of what to believe in terms of religion, but the history is there. Although that comparative religion history, it's kind of funny to me that the way that the different degrees connect to one another, you know what I'm saying, and the kind of lessons you get and the different, you know what I'm saying, it's just really interesting. I don't think it's a coincidence. That's what I think. I think that as you're climbing degrees, it's laid out in that way because they're dropping little bits of knowledge on you, like, hey, did you ever hear about the Dionysian artificers? No? Well, here's a little bit of information. Go study it. It's part of this ritual thing, but you don't have to take it. And then what ends up happening is that you start learning about all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
When it's all said and done, whether or not it's intended by Freemasonry or not, I believe it is. I believe they were laid out that way intentionally. You're coming to a point having gained all this knowledge, having made all these connections and drawn all these similarities between all the different religions. You're going to come to a conclusion about that. You can, of course, you're welcome to believe whatever you want. You can stand there and say, I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe all these other religions are heretical and whatever. You know, and you can still be a 32nd degree Freemason. Doesn't make a difference.
Actually, no, you can't, because one of our primary things is you need to be tolerant of others. And that's why I always try to catch myself, because mm-hmm. I have some intolerant thoughts
from time to time.
But I try to catch myself. That's a tough one to learn.
But I think tolerance and your own personal view about other religions are two different things. You don't have to believe a person's bad because they believe in something you don't, right? I mean, you can say you believe Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and light, and there's no other way around it, and still be a 32nd degree Freemason, as long as you're not going around telling other people that they have to be different than who they are, right? I mean, that's what it teaches tolerance.
By the way, that's something that I made a post about just the other day. That's a bit some sort of bizarre misunderstanding. You do know that virtually all Freemasons in the United States of America are Christians, devout Christians.
Right, I do know that.
And this 33rd degree Mason, my buddy of mine,
mm-hmm.
he not only is a Christian, he teaches Sunday school. I mean, you know, these guys, just like most people in the United States of America are Christians, most Freemasons are Christians.
Right.
It just so happens that you can be a Jew or you can be a Hindu and still belong. That's
right.
What makes us unique and different and special.
Mm-hmm.
But just like in the general population of America, most people are Christians, most Freemasons are Christians.
Right.
And they probably view every single teaching, every single lesson, all the way up to 33rd degree from a Christian perspective.
Right, absolutely. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But getting back to the way the ritual is laid out, I think that one will go through those lessons and come to a conclusion. And I think that based on the research, like I said, you can believe whatever you want. However, a lot of people, and I've talked, I mean, maybe the majority of them don't come to this conclusion, but some certainly do come to the conclusion that, hey, this is, you know, I've talked to hundreds of Freemasons at this point. I've used to surf around all the Masonic websites and hold conversations with them, and I've talked to several of them in person, and, you know, when I get into things and they know I know all the secrets and stuff like that, and I've done my research, they usually open up to me and start to tell me more about what they view things as. Almost every single one that I've talked to, whether they're a proclaimed Christian, whether they're, you know, whatever, most of them come from a Gnostic view. They come from
what do you think Gnostic means? Because we've used that word.
Right. Gnostic means knowledge. It means gnosis. It means to know.
So, by the way, I agree with you completely, by the way. I'm not disagreeing. And I'd almost like the conversation. It's an interesting turn. I'd like to take the conversation. I don't know if we have time or not.
We have about 30 minutes.
On the topic of New World Order, the idea of a New World Order, and da-da-da-da-da, other things that... And I'd be interested to have that as a philosophical conversation. It's not something I've explored a lot. But it would have to be like completely independent of Masonry context.
Right, absolutely.
I'd be curious about it philosophically. But you are correct, and I can name, I'm sure you've probably studied this enough, you can probably pull quotes from lots of books, but I actually know from the ritual itself that I do a lot, that there are some hints and things in there, and I agree with you. I agree it's in there. I agree that that it implies it, that there's specific elements in our ritual that implies it, and people either pick it up or they just don't let it. There's a philosophy or suggestion in it. And what I'll explain it, but I got to say, this is just what I think. And it's probably the same thing you're getting at, is because it is my own personal philosophy, I'm a pantheist. What does that mean? A pantheist means
you believe that
all of creation is God. That everything, all of creation is God. I'll keep it simple. So I believe that all of creation is God. Well, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm got some mathematical background. According to set theory, if everything is God, that makes me God too. You know, we're all God. Every single one of us is part of creation.
Right.
Now,
that's deeply Gnostic, by the way.
Now let's get into something that's spiritual, the concept of a human soul. And what does that mean? A human soul is the concept that there's something about you that survives death. Okay? Obviously, lots of people believe that. From my perspective, I'm an agnostic on that. I don't know whether I have a soul and it survives death or not. That's just me. I don't know for sure. I know that it's a hopeful thought. And there is, in this sort of view, let's say you've got a soul, it survives death, and that the purpose, what's the soul's purpose? The soul's purpose is to better improve itself and be part of creation. And I agree. I think that when you look at the subtext in various books and parts of the ritual, there it implies that message. Is that kind of where you were getting at?
Yes. Absolutely.
And I don't find that scandalous. I think, you know, you can take it or leave it, but I don't think that's particularly scandalous.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that in itself is scandalous. Let me get into some a few things, though. Now, when we're talking about Gnosticism, we're talking about this, like, you know, Gnostic understanding of the idea of God. Like you said, you refer to it as pantheism. Well, you know, a lot of Gnostics wouldn't refer to it as such, but they kind of have a similar view, which is everything.
What would they call it?
Well, a lot of people, I've heard it called many things. I don't think that there's kind of a set thing, you know, name for it, but this idea that everything is God, right? Okay,
right.
Now,
that's a Hindu belief, and Buddhists kind of believe that, kind of.
Right, and you also said that you believe you're kind of like an atheist, except for you know, you said, and I thought it was pretty funny. You said that you think the universe kicks ass. I thought that was hilarious, by the way. But let's build on that real quick.
Let me give you this. I come from, first of all, I used to be known as one of the top 100 atheists on the internet. I like to argue. Okay, I'm very rational. I was brought up from a Christian background, at a certain point when I went to college and I got an education, I began to question things that I'd been told, and like a lot of people, you know, so it's not a unique story. It's happened to a lot of people.
I
considered myself an atheist. And I argued, and I used to argue and argue and argue. I got tremendous enjoyment out of it. I would use sarcasm and ridicule. And that's part of where, you know, now I'm a Freemason, and I've been constantly taught, be tolerant of others, be tolerant of others. And I had a mini revelation, which is I had this idea that, you know, the universe can't be sentient. The universe cannot be self-aware. The universe, sure, the universe is just you know, the molecules and atoms and rock and dirt. It's not anything that's sort of living and breathing. And I had that in my head, and then I suddenly realized, wait a minute. I apply all those attributes to myself. I think that I am living and breathing and thinking, and the world is filled with life. And I realized that it's probably not fair for me to say the universe is not intelligent when I'm willing to say that I'm intelligent. In fact, there's a lot of hubris there to say, oh, I'm intelligent, but the universe isn't. So that really took me a step back philosophically, and I went back to the drawing board, and now I'm an agnostic on that. I don't really know. I do know that according to set theory, I think I'm intelligent, so at least this part of the universe is intelligent. So that's kind of where I've come from, and I couldn't tell you what I believe because I don't really believe anything. I just study. I wanted to interject this, and I'll use this moment. You're a very impressive young man. How old are you?
I'm 28. I'm sorry, I'm 29. I just turned 29. I forgot. You lose track of things this age, you know?
You know, I would jokingly tell people I'm going to go on this conspiracy show, but then I'd immediately correct them. You don't run a conspiracy show. Clearly, you're very well-read. You are deeply inquisitive about things. You've studied stuff. Your interviewing style when you speak to people is humorous and kind and generous. And a lot of the stuff that you have on your website that is conspiracy related is well researched, well documented. I'm very impressed with you as an individual.
Thank you very much.
We're all seeking, right? We're all looking for meaning in life. We're all trying to derive what that meaning is. And I see you that you're investing a lot to try to follow your path. And you know, I don't know what my path is either. It evolves. It all evolves for all of us. But I think you're kind of getting the idea that I agree with you on an awful lot of these points. I just don't agree that, you know, I don't think you believe it either. I just don't think, you know, a bunch of Freemasons are getting together and plotting to take over the world.
We're
a little too busy making spaghetti and, you know, spaghetti dinners.
Right. And, you know, and that's the thing about it is, like, I if you're going to make claims about people, like, I just don't think that anybody who throws out a one-liner, like, they're all this or blah, blah. You know, like, that, almost every single time I hear those types of one-liners, they're almost always 100% incorrect. You know what I'm saying? And before we go, because I know we only have about 30 minutes left for the show, but I do want to ask you a question, and I also want to explain further, because I started to explain and I was getting somewhere, and I wanted to go ahead and finish the point, just so you understand where I'm coming from and why Freemasonry is involved in my site in relation to some of the other more political stuff. And, you know, granted, I was studying Freemasonry because I intended to join at one point. I was, you know, I was kind of in this mind state. Basically, what I believe is that Freemasonry is teaching a certain viewpoint. And I cannot prove it completely, but I think that there's enough information that one needs to at least question whether or not this is occurring. But as a philosophy, like, if, for example, let me ask you this question. Do you believe the rituals create any kind of magical effect? Like, if you believe, if you were to do a ritual, that that there would be like a ritual, if you believe if somebody was to do a ritual that they wanted to win $1 million, that they could possibly win it, do you believe? So you know, and I think that most Freemasons that I've talked to say, no, I don't believe that. That's the supernatural. That's the Pike used
it's called ritual magic.
Right.
And what's most scandalous is if you type in the phrase "the secret," you know what I'm talking about, right?
Right.
The secret. You type in "the secret" and "bullshit." If I'm not the number one hit on the internet, I'll be very upset. which is even if doing a ritual is supposed to have some magical effect, even if that were the truth, at least Freemasons would be doing it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The secret says, wish, you know, wish and get a new car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a complete and utter, you know, it's morally, so what I'm saying, even if you were to believe that performing ceremonies had some magical effect, at least our motivations would be correct. It's the difference between, I think they call it white magic, or, wait, is that right? I don't remember what the term, because I don't really follow ritual magic or anything. But basically, if you're performing ritual for the betterment of others, to uplift mankind, that's positive.
Yeah.
If you're doing it just to be get some material thing for yourself, that's negative. Now, do I believe in ritual magic or believe that it has any effect? No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
But do I believe there's a difference in your philosophically, your attitude, your intent, your purpose, your frame of mind? Yeah, I think there is.
Okay.
And even if your suspicion was that we're doing magic, we're doing the right kind. Okay.
Right.
We don't make philosophically, we don't make a secret about what we're all about. It's for the betterment of mankind.
I don't think that mankind
spiritually.
Just to clarify, my reason for asking that is I don't believe that Freemasons, any Freemason that I've ever talked to, and I've talked to a lot, every single one of them would agree with you 100% on those statements. You do not perform magic for the sake of magic. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. You don't perform ritual because you think you're creating some kind of magical effect, which a lot of people claim stuff like that is occurring.
And a number of authors do as well.
Right. But, you know, the most Freemasons I talk to is they say it's philosophic. The thing is that Freemasonry takes a philosophic approach to religion. The reason why all religions can merge together is because they don't believe in messiahs. You can believe in a messiah if you're a Freemason, but Freemasonry doesn't teach it because they're not interested in the religious aspects. They're interested in the philosophy and the morality aspects of it.
Correct.
As you're going through, though, you are developing and you're learning these things, and a lot of what Freemasonry tends to turn out is Gnostic worldviews. And that now, building on that. There is a philosophy building from people who look at it like, okay, everything is God type of thing. But there are also coming out of that a belief system of people who says, wait a second. Yeah, philosophically, if you want to get all abstract and be, you know, and have some kind of nice fuzzy feelings about things, you can look at the world as being all one. You can look at those religions as being all one and this and that. But ultimately, if we don't believe there's a consciousness or a God, and we don't believe that, you know, any of these supernatural effects or the superstitious aspects of life, like that's what I was going to use. Pike uses superstitious. If we don't believe in the superstitious and we look at it from the purely philosophic, and then there's a number of questions we have to ask. Number one, the race of humanity, and some of the things that there are people who believe in these gods, these superstitious gods, and they believe that everybody on the world should die because of these philosophic or these superstitions. So there has been developing.
What? Wait, I lost me there. Back up.
Okay, there are people in this world who believe that in the superstitions, they believe that everybody should die, and if you don't accept that superstition.
Oh, you mean
other people.
Like Jesus Christ,
like
my personal savior, go to hell?
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, there's all these different viewpoints at battle with one another. And I think that what has developed within this group of people these feel more purely philosophic, and many of them are so incredibly intelligent. And, you know, you talked about Franklin. I think he was one of them. Basically said, you know what? We cannot rely on gods. We cannot rely on superstitions or magic or anything else to determine the future of mankind. The future of mankind is purely in the hands of the people who are running it, bottom line.
Right.
And based off of that philosophy, a number of other things that aren't directly related to Freemasonry, but I think Freemasonry has some part to do with it. And you can see it in Freemasonry, like the term order out of chaos. I've heard that, you know, people have basically tried to say what that means, and, you know, you get into the different symbols, and I think ultimately there's a connection.
I've never heard that. Can you give me a specific reference?
Order out of chaos?
I've never heard that in the context of Masonry.
Order ab cal? You never heard?
That?
Ordo ab cal? It's Latin for order out of chaos. It's the 32nd degree. I mean, there's tons that you can, if you look in the 32nd and 33rd degree, I'm not sure which one it is. Use that.
I guess I don't. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not something I've been part of my experience, but okay.
Okay. So, but that term has been used a lot with people who come from this philosophy. And I find it interesting that there's a connection there, even though it's not expressed. They don't say, oh, this is from Freemasonry. And Freemasonry doesn't say, oh, this is part of that philosophy. But they're both there and they're both used in a similar way. One example is this guy, Zbigniew Brzezinski, which I did a show on. Have you heard about, you know who Zbigniew Brzezinski is, right?
Yeah, and okay. I saw you had that. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm looking forward to
okay.
it.
Okay, well, he refers to that mankind's quest to understand himself in relation to God is this idea of order out of chaos, that the chaotic world of the past was coming into order by people who have perceived beyond the superstition, basically, is what, and this is the kind of the, and it's very abstract, but this is what they refer to, and I almost every time I read it, it's almost the exact same interpretation with small variations and proving different points. His point being right. that we as mankind have to do certain things to create the kind of world we want. And it's a utopian idealism that I talk about all the time. This New World Order is right. a utopian vision, if you will. The problem with it right. is that for one utopian vision to exist, it has to be at the effect of suppressing other utopian visions, because your idea of heaven is my idea of hell, per se. So for your uh-huh. idea of the world to come about the way you want it to be doesn't include mine. And therefore, right. it's only your utopian vision. And everybody has their own ideas of utopianism. Christians do. Islamics do. This group of purely philosophical, pseudo-philosopher types, political scientist types, all have a mm-hmm. utopian vision. And that's their sure. view that it's coming about. The New World Order is their utopian vision, and it is happening. The problem is it right. has a hierarchical view that the average man is primitive, is unenlightened and capable of understanding the truth, which is the Gnostic religion aspect, and okay. that because they're not further evolved enough that their brain can't grasp it, they need to be brought under control and therefore guided by people who do get it. That's what they, and I can see that all throughout the philosophy, and there's a connection with many of those people to Freemasonry, rather, like I said, I believe
sure,
there is an intent
it's
there.
It's part of the philosophy, right? I mean,
right.
I don't think I have much to disagree with you on there, except some of the tone mm-hmm. of the language is... and this was the thing I kind of wanted, because we're kind of getting beyond... The whole Freemason comparative religion crap is beyond us, but, you know, you do. This is your thing on your show. That this is a big part of it, is this suspicion about the New World Order and mm-hmm. the agendas and da-da-da-da-da. And this is not my thing. I've not studied a lot, but you're right. I mean, the philosophy is embedded in Freemasonry. I mean, we like to tell stories about two men meeting on battlefield, finding out they were Freemasons and decided not to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. I mean, it's not even a secret. It's spread out all throughout our philosophy, which is that, you know, we are all part of one human race, and that these ideas of different religions and different nationalities that we use to make war with each other and tear ourselves apart
mm-hmm.
is not good for us. It's not where we should be progressing as the human race. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm not giving away secrets. I, you know, give you stacks of books that just say that overtly. What's wrong with that? Excuse me? I mean, what's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we should continue to have wars because one person believes this about God,
right.
another person thinks we should continue blowing people
up
because of that?
Let me
you
make
think someone
maybe...
who has an enlightened view who thinks, can't we get above all this?
Right.
Do you think Freemasons who go into lodge and actually practice that?
Let me interject here. I'm against all agendas that seek to pursue any type of utopian vision without it being one that includes everybody. And I don't think such an utopian vision could exist, because in essence what they are is a fulfillment of a society that you envision. The only other alternative to that is freedom for all. That's what I believe in. And I believe as long as Freemasonry is endorsing an idea of freedom for all, I'm in total support of that. I have no problem. Go and practice. Do whatever you want. Be part of any religion. As long as you don't hurt other people, we're fine. I have no
right.
disagreement there. However, developing in this philosophy is not one that includes everybody. It's one of suppressing the masses of ignorant people. It's a hierarchical, elitist perspective of... there's people who are too dumb to rule. We are smarter. We have a better vision for the world. Therefore, by any means necessary, we shall control it. Now,
I understand that you have specific case points where people have acted that way,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's not how you bring freedom. That's not how you bring progress. That's
mm-hmm.
not the right way to do it. I mean, you've got case after case on your website. I couldn't couldn't agree more. I mean, we are supposed to, I mean, if the founding fathers were alive today and saw the state of our nation, they would be so appalled they'd probably die in 2 seconds yeah. just from a heart attack.
No doubt.
Okay, what our nation has become today is horrible. It is not the vision of the founding fathers. We have checks and balances in place that have been thrown out. The abuses of power, I mean, that are well documented and you document, I couldn't agree with you more, but those are individual people in positions of power who are practicing agendas. Some of them Freemasons, I don't know, probably some of them are. More likely, their motivation
Pike
is less
was one.
Being a Freemason,
Pike, Pike.
More because they're in bed with a particular oil company, you know?
You know, you got, I mean, if we're going to talk about who in Freemasonry, I mean, you got, case in point is Pike. I mean, Pike was, in, Pike, Albert Pike?
Sure.
And, you know, considering how, and that's one of the things that trips me out, is like, I definitely think he was an incredibly intelligent person. I disagree with you on some of his language. I think it's definitely very wordy, but then again, he wasn't spending a lot of time, like, softening things up. If you didn't get it, tough shit, basically. That's kind of how he looked at it.
I think it's overly complex writing, and it also screams of ego. Every third word is his ego coming through.
Right, he was totally egotistical.
A bit more humility.
No, I totally agree with you there. But, you know, let me ask you something then. This brings me to a question. Why do you think Albert Pike was, ashes were taken into the Grand Temple in D.C., the Mother Lodge Temple of the Scottish Rite? Why do you think they would put that in there? I mean, I would imagine that. I've talked to so many Freemasons, and they almost all agree.
Didn't he create the Scottish Rite?
He did.
I thought Pike...
From what I understand, he created the, well, I don't think he created the entire rite, but he did a lot of the ceremony restructuring or something like that.
He created the ceremonies, he created the southern jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
So I don't understand, what's the question is, so, why wouldn't his ashes be there?
Well, yeah, I guess I can hear you. So
every Scottish Rite temple got a bust. If you're in the southern jurisdiction, yeah, Scottish Pike wrote all the rituals. So
right.
He's the guy you honor.
So let me ask you a question then. Do you think some of that ego would have bled through to actual the rites within Freemasonry?
It's a really good question. And in fact, I think an interesting part of the conversation would be, okay, John, you're sitting here being an apologist for Freemasons and saying all the good things about it. Why don't you say the bad? And I think some of the bad things that annoy me the most are all ego-related. In Scottish rites, the worst of all. Have you heard these titles? Grand Poofoff of the Provost so and so. I mean, these guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of Freemason really took hold at a time when, this was the time of royalty, princes and kings. If you weren't part of the royalty involved in that, you were on the outs. And then Freemasonry came along, and people started giving themselves make believe titles, and they put on airs. This happened a ton in France. Where being part of royalty was such a big deal, and then a lot of that bled through is where people give themselves grand titles and they put all kinds of medals and chests on their chest, and you know what, I'm as disgusted by that as you are, and fortunately for me, most everybody. First of all, if I saw somebody like that, I would avoid them. I wouldn't be my buddy. I wouldn't hang around him. Mm-hmm. And most of the guys I know have just incredible humility. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm fortunate that most of the guys I meet, you know, obviously nobody's all perfect, but are there lots of guys in Freemasonry who just like to give themselves puffed up titles and wear lots of gaudy? Yeah, and I find that as disgusting as you do. In fact, an interesting anecdote is I am very, very anti-fraternity for probably similar reasons that you feel. When I grew up, I wouldn't join anything. I would not join any club under any circumstances. I was a nonconformist. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to do what the rest of the people did. And I had this revelation one day when I was like, you know, it occurred to me I was being so much of a nonconformist that I was actually conforming to the nonconformist lifestyle. Mm-hmm. The fact that I would refuse to do anything that everybody else was doing was actually cutting some things out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to a bit of an understanding. I joined the fraternity, and no, it's not perfect. There's good things and bad things. But what I found is that by not allowing myself to ever join anything in my whole life, I had cut out this pleasure of hanging around with like-minded individuals who have similar values and so forth. That's a good thing, right? I mean, we choose who our friends are. You don't want to just walk in a room and pick 40 people at random. You want people who have similar interests.
Right.
And so that's the positive to me, is these guys and me. And, yeah, I mean, the guys who put on airs, and we actually have a degree in Freemasonry. It's not across the whole country, but it's called the Sword of Bunker Hill. Mm-hmm. And I'm not allowed to tell you what it's about. I wouldn't, because it would spoil the surprise.
Right.
The only lesson of the Sword of Bunker Hill is basically stop taking yourself so damn seriously.
Okay.
That is, it's a comic degree.
Comic relief.
And
okay.
We got guys there who've got more medals on their chest or whatever by the time they end Sword of Bunker Hill. They've learned. I'm just like anybody else.
Okay, cool.
Freemasonry to be on the level,
uh-huh.
And you know what that means.
Right,
does
right.
everybody practice it? No, but I'll tell you, enough guys do practice it that we're somebody. It doesn't matter when you walk in a lodge, if you're president of a corporation or, you know, you have some job that's lower in stature, you're treated as equals, and that a lot of us hold true to that, and
mm-hmm.
I like that.
Okay, absolutely. Now, just for the record, I'm talking to Greg Stewart. He's chatting on the client here. And he says that Albert Pike reorganized the Scottish Rite in the late 1800s. He's the patriarch of the modern Rite. No, he did not write the degrees. He wrote the commentaries to the degrees, not the actual degrees themselves. So I just wanted to take that for the record.
I thought he did, but shows what I know.
And,
yeah, if you want to talk Pike, I think you got to get Greg Stewart on, because
Yeah, absolutely.
But on the philosophy, what I've enjoyed about this conversation is we've touched on a lot of the philosophy. And,
right.
And what I don't understand is I absolutely fully understand where you're coming from about mm-hmm. people in positions of power who have agendas that are affecting other people, that is bypassing the democratic process that we should have these checks and balances. I couldn't agree with you more. I don't get as into it as you do, because just like you said, if you do it too much, it rips you to pieces.
Right.
You get so upset about it. You know, I'll tell you a funny story. I used to be really into UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so into that topic because I studied it, and instead of finding out that it was all a bunch of horseshit, the more I studied it, I was like, there's something going on here.
Right, right.
And I got into the government conspiracy aspect. Government's mm-hmm. covering up UFOs. You know what? They are, okay? I mean, they are. If you study it, and you really study it objectively, I came to the conclusion, yep, there are UFOs, yep, the government's covering up. And then one day I realized, you know what? Doesn't affect me.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really affect me one way or the other.
Maybe one of these days you can do it.
And it's good to get upset about
it. Yeah, exactly.
So I have stopped worrying about UFOs ever since.
Right. And let me, just for the record, I'm planning on doing a UFO show. I mean, I can include you in on that. You'd probably have a lot of fun.
I've got a lot of that. Remember the alien autopsy thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I was, like, all involved in that.
You probably know who Bob Lazar is then.
I was really quite the shit disturber in the UFO community for years. And then today, the only thing is, you heard this thing in our culture called being a cyber bully.
Right.
They're actually going to pass laws that if you say something to somebody on the internet, you're going to, I don't even know what the hell it's all about. but I realized that, you know, there's some people I've been cyber bullying, and there's this guy in a UFO field called Stephen Greer.
Oh, and, Greer, yes.
This man is a piece of work, and he is out there. You want to talk about propaganda. There's no more propaganda being spread than this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I should just let it go. It's one of those things where I'm like, why should I care? Should just let it go. But he's out there every day spreading his line of crap. And every time I hear him on a website or podcast, I can't keep myself from writing a post. I'm pretty sure if you type in his name, I'm probably on the top 10 on internet too. And I do that on purpose. Because
right.
people are going to go, oh, it's Stephen Greer. He's awesome. He's the most, and they type it in and they get one of my sarcastic cyberbully posts.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, that's the thing about it is, you know, the reality is, I feel, is that we need to have dialogue with people about ideas. I mean, that's what this whole thing is. The world is going to be shaped by the conflict of ideas, and the ones that win out are the ones that are going to happen. And you know, when we have so many different views, I think that you need to be, you know, accepting of other people's positions, but they also, you need, I think everybody has an obligation to some extent to compete. You know what I'm saying? Just like in the workforce,
right.
You know, we have a government, we have kind of economy where we have to compete with each other, and, you know, and some people are going to win and some aren't. And the reality is people need to compete with ideas and philosophies and, you know.
You're a very well-read individual, Carl. Have you
Thank
ever
you.
Gotten turned on to Robert Anton Wilson at any point?
Oh, Robert Anton Wilson.
So please say no, because
so
you're
clear.
In for a great treasure and surprise.
It sounds that so clear. Can you refresh my memory? What book name?
Cosmic Trigger is probably what he's most famous for.
Cosmic Trigger?
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. The thing he's most famous for is the Luminatus trilogy.
I've read parts of it. I haven't read the whole thing. I found it online, actually.
Yeah, it's actually not his best work, but in my personal opinion, he's the greatest philosopher of the last century.
Oh,
and,
wow.
He is just unbelievably brilliant. And one of the phrases that he uses that I repeat, but I don't know if other people even know, but have you ever heard the term dialectic struggle?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a $25 word. And what it means is the struggle of ideas, the war of ideas,
mm-hmm.
that when we engage in this exchange back and forth, we benefit each other. When we're not shouting at each other mm-hmm. and being, when you, it doesn't matter what the viewpoint is, you have this struggle, this exchange of ideas. And it doesn't have to be a winner or a loser because both guys win because they've both been enlightened mm-hmm. by that conversation.
Right.
So I like to use that every now and then, even though I don't think most people know what it means.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful idea. I really dig that. You know, like I said, truth, love, and freedom are basically what I'm all about. And my pursuit into delving into these topics, like the New World Order and some of the darker aspects of the world, is because I truly care about everybody. Like, people I don't even know, I care about what happens to them. I care about the kids in Iraq who are dying because of this war that we're in. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like I have an obligation to engage in the debate. Because if I don't, then the people who have bad motives are going to win. And that's why I have to do my thing.
I am personally fascinated, always have been, by why people believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of why I used to go off on religion a lot, because mm-hmm. you know, people who are involved in religions believe some interesting things. And I've learned that I've got to get to this point where people can believe whatever they want about their religion, and I shouldn't bother them, and I'm trying to do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, because there's a whole bunch of other things people believe that are way interesting, and mm-hmm. one of them I've gotten onto lately is free energy. I used to be interested in the UFO stuff,
mm-hmm.
and one is that's cool these days are these people who believe something's going to happen in the year 2012.
It's just
fascinating to hear their rationalizations mm-hmm. and what they and you can't pin them down on anything, but they're so sure of it, it's not even mm-hmm. funny. And there's a wide range of them, and you touch on some of it yourself with this New World Order. It's mm-hmm. there's a NAFTA highway and there's this and the tone of it is always like a lot of the stuff that you and others talk about. Keep in mind, I mean, I had nothing to do with it, but I'm going, that sounds like a good thing to me.
Right, right.
You know, it's that thing I started a rant on earlier. Mm-hmm. If we didn't all just kill each other over our religions and our borders,
mm-hmm.
would that be a good thing? Now, I realize if there's nefarious people doing stuff secret under the hood, I agree with you, that's totally the wrong way to do it.
Right.
But the idea of a new world order, you know, I raise my hand, I'm all for a new world order. The current world order's got problems. It could be better.
Right.
And you talk about utopian society. No, we're never going to reach a utopian society, but shouldn't we at least try to make things better?
There's a lot of things about that. There's a lot of things about that.
This abject suspicion. I mean, mm-hmm. I agree. If it's how you get there, and if these people are doing things mm-hmm. that are doing it in a nefarious way, I'm on board with you.
Right,
but
right.
But in terms of the goal, If all of America, South America, United States, and Canada were all one, all had one currency, we all had no arguments, no wars, we all got along, our trade was such that it lifted all boats, utopian ideas, right?
Right.
What's wrong with that?
Okay.
I mean, conceptually,
but there are things that are wrong with that. I can't address it right now because I got 1 minute. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up? Because I'm out in just a minute.
So. No. I hope you found this.
It was very, very, very interesting. And if you want to continue the conversation, come to my website.
What I'm saying, it's not that I disagree with Greg. It's a different way of saying things.
Right. Yeah, you definitely do. And I appreciate your time coming on here. It was really enlightening, and I hope to have you back again.
Oh, yeah. Bring me on for a UFO show. I'll get a kick out of that.
That'll be fun. All right. Take care.
Right, take care.
John Radcliffe. And this is the Truth, Love, Freedom radio show. As of right now, I don't have anybody for next week, so check the website and I'll see what I got going on. We'll definitely continue on the same topic matter. And as always, you know, it's a battle of ideas. We all have different views. And, you know, it's all about truth, love, and freedom for me. So peace out, everybody. See you next week.
I'll say it for you. Travel the globe and tell everybody that aim low towards you. The feeling's better than patience. I'm not the only person that's able to read the letter on your face, hun. I'll make an alternate ending. It would all be worth it if I were to fall for defending the love on my 12 inches. A love that's unselfish, above all the hellish, because of your well wish.
Phillips head in a case for your screw face. Brought a new pace. Embrace grace. Cut the chase. Know our place in a world of anger with piles of waste. We're some do-gooders with the filtration. We're Mexican, Islander, Euro, African, Asian. Celebrate creator before creation. Division, we're erasing.
Patiently taking all day waiting for the confrontations. The season and nations to do as we've done. Replacement killers love. Good fight.